You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the law offices of Polsinelli in Washington, D.C. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Ann Spiegel, Noam Fishman, and Aaron Felix from the law firm of Polsinelli. We have a great lineup of guests for you on our show today, including Suzanne Marisa, who's General Counsel of OVH U.S., followed by Amy Shepard, General Counsel and Director of Finance, the Good Food Institute, Steve Sherman, General Counsel and Corporate Secretary, BSI Group America, and finally, Zach Stewart, Assistant General Counsel and Assistant Secretary of Serco, Inc. Let's get to know our first guest, Suzanne Marisa, who is General Counsel of OVH U.S. What is OVH U.S., Suzanne?
OVH is a global hyperscale cloud provider.
Tell me a little bit more about what you guys do and for whom.
Well, we have customers all over the world that buy cloud computing and storage from us.
Oh, I see. And how large or how small is the organization?
The organization is quite big overseas. Mm-hmm. We have 27 data centers throughout the world. Mm. Here in the U.S., we have 300 employees and two data centers, one on the East Coast and one on the West Coast.
Cool. And where are you from originally?
From a town called Brookville, Maryland, out near Olney, Maryland.
And how many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have an older brother and a younger sister.
All right. So you're the middle of three. What did that do to you growing up the middle of three?
It made me kind of claim my stake in the world. I had to be a little spunky and a little louder than my siblings.
Uh-huh. How's that play out in your role? It says here you're the General Counsel of OVH U.S.
It made me kind of seek a seat at the table. Mm-hmm. And
so nobody's going to push you around. If you need to get a point across, you're going to do it.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. Okay. I just wanted to get a sense there. And what kind of questions you got?
Tell us a little about your mom and what kind of effect she had on your life.
My mom's had a great effect on my life. She's a very loving person and was always involved in our lives, very much so. She was my Girl Scout leader. She was my church youth group leader. She had me practice piano all the time, and she wanted me to be, I think, a lot like her.
Mm-hmm. What was it? What was that like growing up with a mom who was the leader of everything you were doing?
Well, it kept me active and involved.
Uh-huh. But did you hate the fact mom was there all the time?
No, I actually really liked it.
What do you mean?
I loved having her around, and I have four kids of my own, and I'm around a lot in their lives, and I think she set that example for me.
What's the similarity between being a mom and being the general counsel of OVH U.S.? Similarity?
The similarity is that you have to care a lot about the company, just like you do about your family.
Wait a minute. I read the newspapers, and in business, if somebody doesn't do their job, you fire them.
No, in business, when you're at OVH, and certainly when you're on my team, I empower you, and throughout our company, we empower our employees to do their best work.
Aaron?
What was your favorite subject in school?
English.
And why is that?
Because I love to read and write.
When did that interest start?
It started early on in the fourth grade. The teacher would call my mother and say, you know, I know I shouldn't tell your daughter that she can't read in class, but it's really disruptive because I'm trying to teach the class and all she does is read when I'm talking.
Mm-hmm. And does that continue to this day?
I do love to read.
Mm-hmm. And how does your love of English and reading affect your day-to-day job today?
Well, you have to read and write a lot as a lawyer because you have to communicate effectively. So that's how I spend a lot of my day.
No. So you get to do what you love.
I do, and I do love it.
Noah?
Tell us about sports. What kind of sports were you interested in?
Well, growing up, I did gymnastics, but my real love is tennis.
And when was it that you figured out that tennis was your thing?
Well, I figured out that I was good in sports, really good in sports, for the first time when I was in ninth grade.
How did that happen?
Well, I was in PE class, and we had stations. Like, you do a different kind of sport each week. And Annie Hanlon and Beth Lowry were the two girls in my PE class that were phenomenal in sports. And I'd go out each week, and I'd realize that, oh my goodness, not only can I keep up with them, sometimes I've been even better than they are.
You remember the names?
I do, because when I was young and growing up, my mom was good at all these kind of cultural and musical types of things, but she never considered herself to be much of an athlete. And when you're young, you relate to your parents so much, and you think that you are just like them. But I found kind of my own identity through sports, and it was very empowering for me.
How did that realization change who you were then?
It made me strive for more. It made me believe in myself. It gave me a lot of confidence. And tennis has given me not only the belief in myself that I can be very good at something with a lot of practice and a lot of tenacity, but it has given me a lovely social life. I have a lot of friends through tennis. I find a lot of joy in it.
And how do those realizations impact how you do your job now?
It's about forming relationships. It's about doing your best every day and empowering others to do their best every day.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about that. What was Dad all about?
Dad was more quiet, a little bit of a loner, kept to himself.
Mm-hmm. How was your relationship with your father?
It wasn't what I would have liked for it to be. It wasn't bad. It really just wasn't there.
So you really look for the intimacy in a relationship. You're comfortable with intimacy in a relationship. And my bet, long-term relationships? Is that true?
It is so true. I definitely look for intimacy, and I find it hard when there is no intimacy in a relationship.
So what's that have to do? I mean, you don't usually use the word intimacy when it comes to being a general counsel of a large organization. How does intimacy play into your building this company?
It plays into relationships.
What do you mean? Why are relationships so important in business, or are they? I don't mean to be putting words in your mouth.
They are. You need people to commit and to be all in to what they're doing.
I thought that's the benefit of the law. If somebody doesn't do what they agreed, you sue them, right?
No.
That's being silly. What's reality look like, though?
The reality is that you don't want to go around suing. You want to prevent it from ever getting to a bad place.
And how do you prevent it?
By treating people fairly, by advocating for your customers, by treating them right, by treating your employees well.
That's interesting. That's not what I read in the newspapers, but you're general counsel and an attorney of this organization that's growing very quickly. You know what you're talking about. Well, what's the best part of your job?
I love the challenges that my job presents. I get to do so many things, and it's engaging. Every day I wake up, it's every day something is new, and that's exciting.
Doesn't that drive you crazy? You never know what to expect?
No, I love it.
You love the difference?
I do. I would be so bored otherwise.
So how does tennis and how does being general counsel, is there a similarity between the two? In terms of being prepared, you never know where the ball's going to go.
Certainly, tennis is a lot of strategy, right?
Uh-huh.
And I spend my day thinking deeply and thinking strategically.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a similarity there for sure.
And that's with other team members, it sounds like.
It is.
Otherwise, you're just thinking. It's not going to go anywhere. It really is a matter of traction with other people. Am I right about that?
Yeah, they call tennis an individual sport, but it is also a team sport. You're playing someone else, and you're playing as part of a team, and we're very collaborative. I find my other, you know, the other leadership and, uh-huh, and certain people on my team to,
well,
I need
you,
them, they need me,
yeah,
we need
knowing
each other.
You, considering how relationships are so important, I'm not surprised to hear that. What other questions you guys thinking? Aaron, what are you thinking?
I'm curious, Suzanne, going back to, you said you play the piano. What type of music did you like to play the most?
I liked classical music.
Really?
I did.
And what about classical attracted you?
It's complexity and its ability to move you, mm-hmm, emotionally.
And did you, was there a particular composer or type of
That's
style?
Fascinating.
That you
the
enjoyed?
Complexity and the ability to move you emotionally. That's really who you are, isn't it?
It is.
What do you mean?
Life is interesting and life is long, and I've done some really cool things in my life, mm-hmm, and
So there's a real complex side to you. Yeah,
there is.
But there's without other people, what's the use of thinking, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you really enjoy the relationships with other people. What's the best part of your day?
Best part of my day
is
going around to snuggle each of my kids at night.
I thought you were going to tell me business stuff. You're this hot dog, but you're telling me about the kids, huh? Wow, that's wonderful. What's the website address of this organization?
It's OVH Cloud.
OVHCloud.com?
Correct.
At home, who wears the pants in the family, you or your husband?
I would say we both do.
Yeah, I was going to say it's probably a collaborative environment after getting a feel for you. Let me have the website address one last time.
OVHCloud.com.
Mm-hmm. We've been speaking with Suzanne Marisa, General Counsel of OVH US here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this break. We nailed that. We're back. You're listening to Executive News Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohn. We'd like to introduce Amy Shepard, General Counsel and Director of Finance, the Good Food Institute. Amy, what is the Good Food Institute?
The Good Food Institute, or what we affectionately call GFI, is a 501c3 nonprofit, and we use food innovation in markets to transform the global food system away from conventional animal products towards plant-based and clean meat.
Where are you from originally?
I am from Kaysville, Utah.
And what was the population of Kaysville, Utah when you were growing up?
It was probably around 8,000 people.
And what do you think the upside of growing up in a small town of 8,000 was?
The sense of community, of familiarity. It was safe. I remember riding my bike all the way down to 7-Eleven and getting Slurpees, things like that.
So you grew up in a safe environment. So big deal. What kind of seeds could that have planted in you?
I think there's a sense of security that comes from that, and I ended up being different than other people that were around me where I grew up, but because I grew up someplace that I had a lot of security, I think both with my neighborhood, with my friends, with my family, it really gave me the strength to make the decisions I needed to make.
Aaron?
Amy, did you have any siblings?
Yes, I have a half-brother and a half-sister.
And what's the age difference is there?
My half-brother is 24 years older than me, and my half-sister is probably around 16 years older than me.
So you told a really interesting story earlier about your brother, and you referred to him as a 1970s hippie. Can you tell us a little about that?
He was a 1970s hippie. that's where he was. He grew up in Utah in the 50s and 60s and then moved to San Francisco. And so when I was young, and I was born in the 70s, when he did a lot of things. Like I remember once he gave me a book, and it had a really cute story about some bears that put sugar in their porridge, and he had gone through the book and crossed out sugar everywhere and put in honey because it was more organic and natural.
And how does that relate to the work you do today?
Well, the Good Food Institute is all about, good food, plant-based, things that are good for the environment, for people, for its health. And I think that, caring about something that way and being able to, frankly, look at a book that was printed and say, you know what, I don't accept that. I'm going to cross that out.
You mentioned your family was a little different, the environment you grew up. What do you mean your family was different? What are you talking about?
Well, my dad was what they call a Jack Mormon, which is someone who is in the church, but not really. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the people that lived around me, they had two parents. They were both very involved in the church, a lot of kids. I was raised as an only child. I had half siblings, significantly older. One was a hippie. He's also gay. So just very different than other people around me.
Zach?
Wow. Okay. So when did your brother reveal that fact to you?
Oh, he, way before I was born, I think in the 70s, to my father. And he came out in the 70s when he went to San Francisco.
So knowing that you had that going on in your family, someone who's that different from the environment you were raised in, mm-hmm. what did that do to you?
I'm incredibly close to my brother. He's one of the most influential people that I've met on this planet. And I love him so much. And I just got him. We get each other. We have so much fun together. So for me, the a lot of people had views about homosexuality, in the 80s and the 70s that are very different than now. But I just looked at this person that I knew. And I'm like, this person, I know this person. This is the truth. And so for me, it was a good foundation to say, I don't necessarily have to accept what other people are believing about this because I know I have firsthand experience with this individual.
And made a difference. What are you thinking?
And you mentioned that you grew up in this really safe environment, but obviously you had a different different dynamic than other people in the environment. What do you think it is about you that helped you gravitate toward what was different rather than staying with what was safe?
Well, I would like to argue a lot, and my father liked to argue a lot, and we had a lot of fun arguing together, and it's no fun to argue with people who think the same thing you do. So I think that, being very close to my parents, being raised as an only child, I was around adults a lot. And so I was already a little different than all my neighbors that were just hanging out with their brothers and sisters. I hung out with their friends a lot because my father was a Jack Mormon. A lot of his friends were also different than a lot of the dads that were around. So I think that those things made me secure. I loved those people. They were fun to be around. They never questioned, me being argumentative, which was not like a lot of the other girls in my town. So that was also very, I think, affirming.
Mm-hmm. Noam?
Tell us about Mom and Dad. What were they like?
My dad was a goofball. They're both teachers. My dad taught high school. My mom, my grandma used to call her the general, but she was also a school teacher. So my dad was much more happy-go-lucky. My mom kind of made sure everything got done.
So being school teachers, you had an opportunity to spend a lot of time with them in the summer. What was that like?
It was really fun. I think that I got to do a lot of things. We traveled. We golfed a lot. Golfing was big in my family. And so I really enjoyed that. They spent a lot of time with me. So I think I got to know them as individuals, as people, and not just in sort of a parent-child relationship.
And so how do those relationships that you formed when you were younger with them and perhaps others, how do they impact what you do for work now?
Well, I think that having different people in my life like that and having to form relationships with them, you kind of learn the way to communicate with people. So, for example, like I went between my parents, who were I could be very open with, and my brother, to my cousins, who are deeply religious, and they're wonderful people, and I'm very close to them. So you learn to adapt to the environment and the people that you're talking to. I think as an attorney, that's one of the most important things, certainly as in-house counsel, because I don't work with a lot of other attorneys. I work with business people. I work with communications, innovation, scientists. And so you have to be able to think like a lawyer, but deliver your message in a way that will resonate with them, that they understand for their world, and then they can use in the work that they do.
If you had to pinpoint the most important lesson that you learned from your father, what would it be?
To enjoy life, to have fun, to be a goofball.
How's that goofball stuff come into work every day?
Legal training, compliance training, things like that, it's excruciatingly boring for people. And I make it fun. I'm going to brag a little bit here. I make it fun. My trainings, they're funny. They're serious. They get the points across. I incorporate movies into my training. It's kind of a joke at GFI. And you know what? I've seen other people do trainings in other areas, and they reference movies too. And I couldn't be prouder.
So you're telling me that part of your role is compliance training, and in order to get people excited about coming to the training and retaining this stuff, you use goofball.
I use humor.
You use humor as opposed to making it dry and boring and I'm going to fall asleep.
Absolutely. And I've had a couple of attorneys in my life, most importantly the judge that I clerked for, Philip Pro, right out of law school, who was such a great example of that. Like, he was so professional. He was at work every day at 6 o'clock. He was an excellent judge, and when you went back in chambers, he could be such a goofball. Mm-hmm. But you could see that you can enjoy life, you can keep your sense of humor, you can incorporate your sense of humor into your work and make it more effective.
Huh. Next question, Aaron. What else are you thinking? I got a bunch of questions here. So it sounds to me like, because of your childhood, because of your brother, because of the way you grew up with some halves, that you grew up different, and but you grew up feeling safe, and it planted the seeds for you to do things differently. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons I guess you got turned on by taking the role of General Counsel and Director of Finance for the Good Food Institute, because you're comfortable doing things and stepping out to be different. Yet, you've got some great communication skills, and you've got this bonded thing going on, and it's the reason you're able to help build the team. Am I correct about that?
I think absolutely, and I think that the Good Food Institute has been a really great fit for me because it's also very unusual to be general counsel and director of finance. Mm-hmm. Those are usually split. I have a finance background in some of the law that I did, particularly when I started out. But to find an organization that is willing to think outside the box like that and say that, we can combine these roles and it can be effective.
Yeah. What's the website address for the Good Food Institute?
It's gfi.org.
Let me have that one more time.
gfi.org.
We've been speaking with Amy Shepherd, General Counsel and Director of Finance at the Good Food Institute here on Executive Leaders Radio. We will be back in a moment right after this break.
Oh, man, did we do it.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce Steve Sherman, who's General Counsel and Corporate Secretary, BSI Group America. What is BSI Group America, Steve?
BSI is also known as the British Standards Institution. It's a century-old quality management systems and standards business.
How large or how small is the organization?
Well, we've got about 800 employees in my region, which is North and South America, about 4,000 or more globally.
Wow. And where are you from originally?
I am a native, proud native of Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, Amish country.
How many brothers and sisters?
I'm the oldest of three, two-year younger brother and a five-year younger sister.
All right, you're the oldest of three. Okay, Noam, your turn.
Steve, tell us what it was like to grow up in Amish country, Pennsylvania.
I have a slightly different perspective. I'm the son of a native, so my father and his parents, you know, my father grew up there, but it was a small town, and it was made a little more challenging in that I was part of a very small Jewish community, so I faced some anti-Semitism. I was different.
And so how did that impact you then?
How it impacted me then, it made me very somewhat conscious, self-conscious of being different, but also I think it instilled in me a sense of empathy and the ability to see people who are different as not necessarily being different.
And that, how does that impact what you do and who you are in business today?
You know, it's so essential, I think, as a lawyer, and particularly in the in-house world, to be empathetic, to be open to receiving information and to building relationships, because the value that we have isn't just being lawyers and getting to answers, but it's to be a recipient of information and to figure out paths forward for people that might have challenges.
Mm-hmm. Anne?
So you've told us that you always had jobs as a kid. What kind of job did you get when you were 16?
Oh, I started working at a kitchen cabinet factory long before custom cabinetry was as fancy-schmancy as it is today. And I was both on deliveries on routes as well as sanding excess stain spills on door jamb openings.
So that's not a job we necessarily associate with kids. What made you different than other kids that made them want to have you in that position?
I was the only kid. Everybody else was out of high school at that point. But what was critical to me was I was assigned to make sure there were no stain spills in those door openings of these very expensive cabinets, and I made sure there were no stain spills.
You mentioned that to us that you were hyper-focused on being the best. So how did that play out for you as you've developed your career?
Lawyers are expected to operate with a degree of exactitude. We're paid to be precise. You can't always be right, but you have to build trust, and from the trust comes from trying to be the best you can be and offer the best possible judgment and advice that you're able in each situation.
Mm-hmm. Aaron?
If you weren't a general counsel, what would you be?
Oh, my God, I'd be managing bands, or I'd be a road manager for a rock band. No question.
Really? You'd be a roadie?
Absolutely.
And what is it about roadie life that attracts you?
It's just, I love the idea of, it's kind of like being in a traveling circus where people bring their own experiences in life and they come from all different places and backgrounds and they bring it together to make a production something successful.
And how does that affect how you approach your day-to-day life today?
I live in chaos. It's what I love it. I really do. And it's what I love about being a corporate in-house lawyer is that I'm never quite sure what each day is going to be like. Mm-hmm. You have to be just ready for whatever might arise.
Zach, what are you thinking?
So I'm still thinking about something Steve said before about wanting to be the best. And I'm curious, so how did you adapt when you found yourself in a situation where you couldn't be as good as you wanted to be?
I got comfortable with being uncomfortable. And I think that's kind of a hallmark of being an in-house lawyer and being good in that role to the business and to serving the business. It's simply being okay to not be entirely comfortable, to trust your judgment, to know that others look to us and trust us, and just to do the best you can. And you can't be perfect and you can't always be right. You just have to be as good as you can be.
Mm-hmm.
Steve, looking back, who did you idolize as a kid? Who was your role model?
In many ways, I had many, but always my father, just because he was local. He built a successful business, and he was really an exemplar of what, you know, being a community member and someone who was looked to. He was a home builder, and he built a lot of homes for teachers, firefighters, police officers, just all of the people who were around who made the community tick. And what I learned early on is that reputation, reputations are built and they can easily be destroyed.
Wait. So it sounds like your father knew a lot of people, and you were quite proud of that, it sounds like.
Oh, absolutely. And what I learned early on was how essential relationships are to life and to being a professional.
So when you were a kid growing up in this community, did you walk around feeling like a real snot because, you know, everybody knew your dad and you could get away with everything? Or how did it make you feel?
It was less that, but there was visibility that came with, and there was responsibility, I think, that came with being someone who was at least part of, you know, had more visibility.
You felt responsibility because of that visibility. Did your dad tell you that, or did you just figure that out for yourself?
I think it was a little of each, but what I saw was, again, you know, it's all about, you know, how others view you, and, you know, missteps can easily derail things.
How's that play into your role as the General Counsel and Corporate Secretary of BSI Group America, which is, I think you mentioned, 4,500 people?
I've worked very hard to build trust and to build relationships with all of my business partners and my inside business clients, because that's just what they want me to do, and it's how I can be most effective in the role.
That's interesting. Ann and Erin, what kind of stuff are you guys thinking? What are you thinking?
So I'd like to go back just to the music piece of it. You mentioned earlier that music's a big part of your life. What is it about music that attracts you?
Well, I have, you know, I like a lot of types of music, but I'm actually really a metalhead at heart, and I've been listening to heavy and hard rock music since I was an early tween. What music does is it simply enables me, I think, to exercise and my creative side, and it keeps me very engaged and focused, and it doesn't allow things to get boring.
So what's important about having being able to exercise your creative side, and how do you apply that in your job?
You know, we're just so often tasked with coming up with solutions to what the folks who bring them to us think might be vexing problems in business. And it's fun to try to devise solutions that maybe haven't otherwise been thought of. And it's a fun part of the role.
Are you telling me that when you're listening to Metallica, you're coming up with creative solutions to business problems?
Absolutely.
Are you serious?
Swear to God.
Huh. So some music's a release for you. It allows your right brain to kick in. It allows the intuitive stuff to kick in.
A big release. Look, I grew up in a home where the radio was always on. We were in the car. The radio was always on. My parents always had music on in the house. It just was part of the background at all times.
Huh. So as opposed to distracting you from your legal career, you think it actually lends itself to a creative. It helps you be creative and relax.
For me, it does. Absolutely.
Uh-huh. What, are you married or single?
I'm married.
How many kids?
We have two kids, a recent college graduate, and as of Saturday, a second college graduate.
Uh-huh. What do you hope for them? You want them to be attorneys, or what do you want them to do?
You know what? My wife and I both used college very much for vocational purposes. We simply majored in something we knew that was going to get us a job. I was an accountant. She was a radio, TV, and film major, and we made sure we were employable. We wanted our kids to be less linear, and we just encouraged them to just find something they loved. Learn how to just think critically, to read, to write well, to speak.
Wait a minute. Aren't you worried about them making a lot of money?
You know what? They'll figure out a way. My kids are ambitious on their own, and my wife and I are quite confident they'll do fine.
Wait a minute. So let me get this straight. You've been encouraging your kids to find something they love as opposed to make a lot of money, because if they can figure out what they love, then they'll figure out how to make a lot of money from it.
Passions are essential. You have to find something that makes you want to get up every day. And that certainly was an example that my parents led.
How'd you get that example? Where'd you get that from?
Well, because my mother was a homemaker. My father was very entrepreneurial. But he found a way to use his work, which he very much enjoyed, to facilitate his other passions, whether it was bike riding and music and travel and tennis and whatever it was. And I saw that as an example of how I wanted to live my life.
What do you mean?
That I don't, I work to live. I don't live to work.
Give me that again.
Well, I enjoy my work, but work simply enables me to do the things outside of work that I'd rather be doing when I'm not working.
Huh. So you enjoy your... Does work feel like work?
Sometimes it does. Of course it does. But I also like it because I love to read, and I love to write, and I love to receive information, and I love to try to synthesize that into bits that are helpful.
All right, wait a minute. What time do you start with your emails in the morning?
6 a.m. when I get up.
What time do you end with your emails at night?
Midnight after Stephen Colbert's opening lines.
Do you get paid extra for working overtime?
I do not.
Do you have to work Saturdays and Sundays?
I am pretty much on all the time, and it's...
And you're telling me that most of the time it doesn't feel like work, that you're really enjoying this.
I like to help out, and I feel in many ways very privileged to be a corporate in-house lawyer. It's different than...
Well, now I understand why you're talking to your kids about, and you know, really finding out what they love to do, because then it doesn't feel like work, and that's why you're really enjoying yourself. What's the website address of this organization?
It's bsigroup.com.
Let me have that one more time.
bsigroup.com.
We've been speaking with Steve Sherman, General Counsel and Corporate Secretary of BSI Group America, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment, right after this break. Oh, man, we nailed that one. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohn. We'd like to introduce Zach Stewart, Assistant General Counsel and Assistant Secretary, Serco, Inc. Zach, what is Serco, Inc.?
Serco, Inc. is a professional services provider, mostly to governments.
Uh-huh.
We provide public services with a human touch. Anything from installing IT racks on Navy ships so they can communicate with each other more effectively to running driver education and test centers in Ontario, Canada.
How large or how small is the organization?
Serco has about 8,400 workers right now, and mm-hmm. we're about a $1 billion company.
All right. Who's got the next question? I think it was Noam, right?
Hey, Zach, so tell us about some of the challenges you faced in getting to where you are today.
Did you mention some sort of learning, supposedly, disorder or something like that?
I'd say the biggest challenge I faced in getting to where I am today is I deal with anxiety and depression that I wasn't diagnosed with until college, and ADD that I wasn't diagnosed with until the end of law school.
And so how have you dealt with that, and how has those challenges helped you achieve the success you've achieved in business?
I think they've played a big role, because I was always naturally creative. What discovering those things about me forced me to do was to develop coping skills to help me be more organized, to be more attuned to the social dynamics around me, and it made me a whole lot more observant and a whole lot more empathetic, frankly, to what other people might be experiencing, because the treatments that I've taken have driven me to have different perspectives at different times.
And how does that impact how you are as counsel for your company?
Oh, it's very big. I mean, I guess listening and the ability to provide empathy and not sympathy, not feeling sorry for people, but empathy, to really put myself in their shoes and use my imagination to figure out, okay, if I'm in their shoes, what do I know? What do I need to know? How do I get this done? Allows me to give advice that they can actually act on.
Erin, what are you thinking?
So, Zach, I'm curious. You talked earlier when we were chatting about music and how it had a big role in your life. Tell us a little bit about that.
It did. So I started playing trumpet in fifth grade, but it was really when I joined the marching band in high school that I really started to find my identity.
And how is that?
There was a part of me that wanted a stage. I was a trumpet soloist in the band, despite the fact that I had a hand tremor and untreated anxiety, which was really something.
So what did you learn from participating in band?
I learned how to lead by example. Mm-hmm. Before that, I thought that leading was about, halftime speeches. But what I saw was, leading was about good habits and about teaching people, dedication over time.
And how does that affect you, how you do your job today?
It affects me a lot because I don't just try to provide advice. I try to teach people a little bit to make them smarter for the next time they face a similar decision. I try to provide them with context so they understand how I'm getting to where I'm going, so that they can better anticipate what I might tell them tomorrow too, not just today.
All right, Anne, what are you thinking?
You described yourself to us earlier as a band geek in high school, but then you also told us that your first real job was as a civilian attorney for the Marines. So how did those two things square, and what is it about you that kind of made each of those a fit for you?
So, yeah, a lot of people get surprised by that. The thing that I loved about working for the Marine Corps was the advice you provided had to be something that someone could act on quickly. You know, I wasn't an attorney in wartime, but I worked with people that were. And at the end of the day, they faced questions like, hey, that truck is coming at us. Can we shoot it? And I never faced that question. But what it crystallized for me was someone needs to be able to take a step, a tangible step of action right after I provide this. Am I giving something that will allow them to do that?
Interesting. Next question. Who's got it?
Zach, take us back to the dinner table in your house growing up. What was that like?
We watched the nightly news every night. I would watch my dad react, often emotionally, to different things going on in the world and in politics. And I questioned him all the time. Got to, you know, sort of understand how different levers being pulled in different places led to certain results.
And so you're watching his reactions. Take us back 8 years old. What were you thinking as he would react to the current events in the news?
Probably just a lot of, you know, child why questions. Dad, why are you upset?
And talk about the interactions with him. I mean, did you ask questions? Did he answer them? What were those interactions like?
He did. I mean, I see it in my own children. Just constant curiosity.
And how did that impact Zach as the student?
It gave me a love of context, and it provided, you know, a sense of reward and value to understanding the greater sphere in which the small problem that I'm looking at fits in.
What's that have to do with your being general counsel and, let's see, it says you're assistant general counsel and assistant secretary of CIRCA. What's that have to do with your role nowadays?
Oh, a lot.
What are you talking about? What do you mean?
So government contracting, it's a highly complex industry, but it's also changing all the time, which fits me well because, you know, it's interesting and it rewards people who watch it closely. And sometimes knowing the environment that we're in, and I can see a small change and see a storm, you know, hours, weeks, months away that I'm, you know, positioned to help my people deal with.
So you have this significant ability to anticipate. You're always aware of what's going to happen 3 and 4 steps down the pike. It's your nature to do that curiosity. You know, the fact that you were a kid and you were so interested in world politics and what's happening in this country, just digesting those facts, you have a natural ability to do that, don't you?
It doesn't. And actually, that's something, that was one of the things that helped me figure out that I had this attention issue, was I went digging through an old box that my mom had saved up all my old report cards, and I kept seeing the same comment over and over and over from the teachers.
Gotcha. What's the website address of this organization, CIRCO Inc.?
It is www.circo-na, as in North America, .com.
Excellent. We've been speaking with Zach Stewart, Assistant General Counsel and Assistant Secretary of CIRCO Inc. We've also had the opportunity of speaking with Suzanne Marissa, General Counsel of OVHUS. Also, Amy Shepard, General Counsel and Director of Finance, the Good Food Institute. Steve Sherman, General Counsel and Corporate Secretary, BSI Group American. And most recently, Zach Stewart, Assistant General Counsel and Assistant Secretary of CIRCO, Inc. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Ann Spiegel, Noam Fishman, and Erin Felix, who are at Polsinelli, the law firm of Polsinelli, acting as my co-hosts today. And I'd like to thank my listening audience, without whom we wouldn't have a radio show. And hopefully we were delivering to you today an entertaining and educational show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. It's executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. We appreciate and thank you for joining us today. And do have a nice day. Bye-bye.
Oh, man, we nailed this show.